play with the microphone on how to do that. My name is Kermit, and I'm an addict. I'm clean today through the grace of God and Narcotics Anonymous, and I am honored to death to be able to stand up here in front of you people and share anything at all. Anytime, anywhere. I have the utmost respect and admiration for the members of Narcotics Anonymous. Anytime, anywhere. Because I know what kind of courage and strength it takes to stay clean for one day. Right. You all need to applaud yourselves. I've been walking down the hall singing, "Put me in, coach, I'm ready to play today." A moment of silence for me. I've been interviewing people for the last couple of months. And everybody I know, I talk to, I say, "Yeah, I'm doing a workshop called Reciprocity." "What does that mean?" We go, "Reci, who?" And this morning I was on the phone to my mother, and I said, "Mom, what do you think?" She's real English-minded and very literate. And I said, "What do you think reciprocity means?" And she says, "Oh, that means getting back at." And I spoke to my honey, and she said, "Yeah, I think she mistook reciprocity for revenge." And you wonder why I shot heroin. This guy went to an Eastern yogi and asked him this question. He says, "The Bible says evildoers shall be punished and the good rewarded. What do you think of that, yogi?" Now, that's not Yogi the Bear, because he's a good addict. "How about a nice picnic basket? Boo boo." Right, Yogi? Once too many, 1,000 never enough. And the yogi says, certainly, if we accept the principles of cause and effect in nature and of action and reaction in physics, how can we not believe that this natural law extends also to human beings? Do not humans belong to the natural world? And then further on he says, this is the law of karma. If you sow evil, you will reap evil in the form of suffering. And if you sow goodness, you will reap goodness in the form of inner joy. I have inner joy today. And it's a gift that was given to me by the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. I was on the phone because I want to talk to my son. My son's 23 years old today. Not this day, but he is 23. And he grew up in an addict's home, you know? He grew up with a father who was an addict. He grew up with a mother who was an addict. He grew up with a stepfather that was an alcoholic. His stepfather just passed away. The guy was my running partner. And they just cremated him 2 weeks ago from this disease. And, you know, when your parents can't be there for you, you know, and you got to face the world by yourself, it's a tough job. And it's a real tough job for a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old or a 6-year-old or an 8-year-old. You know, he was dyslexic, he had reading problems, he had trouble in school, the whole nine yards. And I got clean and wanted to get him back, you know. And it was real tough because I'd get him for the weekends or the holidays and have to send him back to my ex-wife and her husband who were, you know, drunk all the time. But I wasn't ready yet, you know. And as I became ready, you know, it's the old thing, you know. When the pupil's ready, the teacher will appear. And God will give you what you need. And a woman came into my life, and a week later, my ex-wife called me and said, "I can't do this anymore. I got to go to treatment. Would you take him back?" I didn't have to go to court. I didn't have to do papers. I didn't have to do nothing. And I got my son back when he was 12 years old. We called it the Wonder Years. It was a wonder I didn't kill him. And what happened was the two of us grew up together, you know? And we learned about resentment, and we learned about taking it out on each other, and we grew up. And he saw me talk to sponsees, and he saw me act in a way that was honest and humble and giving and sharing and all these things that I was taught in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. He said he saw me live that life, and he decided to chew that life. And he doesn't use it. And a college kid today, I'd use him as a miracle. You know? And I called him up because my sister told me that he just got accepted into the Fine Arts College in Boston, one of the best art schools in America. Yeah. And I called him up, you know. Some Jewish guy said, you know, you give me such knockers, you know. Like the chat lady, I'm so clipped here, talk amongst yourself. I am so proud of my son, I can't tell you, you know. And I owe that gift to Narcotics Anonymous. You know? Reciprocity to me means that there's a deal here, okay? We don't tell you really about it when you first come in. We just say, don't use, go to meetings, 90 meetings in 90 days, you know, work the steps or die, motherfucker. At least that's what they told me. You know, the first time I heard that was in Georgia. I like to say that the brains of Narcotics Anonymous is in California, but the heart of NA is in Georgia. Yeah. Sorry if you're from the West Coast, excuse me, but in 1909,
going to AA and going to our one or two NA meetings where they told us we could go talk about drugs. That's what we sat around in circles and talked about drugs. And when a bunch of addicts talk about drugs, they want to get loaded. When a bunch of addicts sit around and talk about recovery, they want to stay clean. You know? And this guy, this old guy, his name's Larry North, he's passed away. We used to call him the old man. You know, he must have had God 7-8 years clean back then, right? That was forever. And he had this old green truck. And he just load up addicts into this truck. You know, whenever you open up, it's like that clown thing at the circus, just newcomers that come bubbling out. And he said, we're going to a convention. Whenever Larry said something, I learned to say, okay. You know? Larry would say, we're having a camp out, a roundup. I said, okay. You know? I was 9 months clean, and we'd never ever had anything like that. And I said, okay. And, you know, he said, do this, do that. And the next thing, he said, I'll get some flyers. And the next thing we knew, in 1982, 125 addicts from all over the East Coast showed up in Nowhere, Virginia for the very first Blue Ridge Roundup we ever had, the first NA function we ever had. And Larry called me and said, get in the car. I said, great, where are we going? He said, we're going to a convention in Georgia, in Atlanta. And I went, all right. And I got in this old car at about midnight, and we were driving them through the South. And I'm a New Yorker, really. I've been in the South for a bunch of years. But at 3 o'clock in the morning, driving in the middle of South Carolina with the rain pouring down and a redneck cop behind me and the steering wheel turning this far, and I'm still going straight. Oh, God, just get me to Georgia, please. But we made it, and, you know, the fellowship was there. And they welcomed us, you know. And it was a time of change, you know. This friend of mine stood up at the microphone, you know. He said, you know what I think is great about this convention? He said, this is a Narcotics Anonymous convention with Narcotics Anonymous speakers. That was a novel idea back then. You know, most of the speakers that we had gotten for the conventions were AA people that were addict alcoholics.
And there was this talk about this book that was being written, and they, you know, and everybody's passing stuff out, and it was exciting, you know. They had that floppy, the white, they had that out yet? Great, the floppy. And they were passing it out, and we were making copies everywhere. We didn't know we were supposed to do that stuff. And my ex-wife was in Michigan, and she was doing like 400 at a time. And the office sent her a cease and desist note, you know. And they got it, and they said, we'll make one more batch, you know. And they sent them a copy on the top of the batch, and it said, recovery can't wait. I got excited, you know. And I had the time of my life. I was driving back home, and I said, man, Larry, what can I ever do to repay you? You know, you tell me, what can I, this has been the best time of my life. He said, oh, payback's a mother. He says, you see, you have to do this for others and often. Now, September 6th, I'll be celebrating 15 years in Narcotics Anonymous. And I still haven't paid Larry back. And what a friend of mine from California says, that may not impress the shit out of you, but it impresses the shit out of me that I got 15 years. When I first got clean, I went through 3 treatment centers in 2 years, and a year of treatment, a year of therapy, and a bunch of AA meetings, not too many because I didn't want to go, you know. Because I wasn't ready, that's all. I wasn't willing. And I finally hit bottom on my last day in that. After I left the treatment center. I'm still doing it my way.
They wanted my house for months, and I spoke to my higher power. Her name's Patty. And she told me, she said, what do I tell them? She said, tell them you made your mind up. So I went back to group and said, I've made my mind up. I have to go home.
Got home to that basement apartment with my using buddy. I'd moved out of my brother's house because he was shooting heroin. I couldn't live there, but I made a decision. I moved in with my best friend who was only dealing cocaine. There are easier ways to recover, folks. Yeah. I mean, all my friends would be in the living room smoking dope, and I'd be in the back reading the big book. I got to my buddy's place, and I wanted to use it so bad I could taste it, and I was thinking about it all the way home, and for the first time in my life, something cracked inside, and I turned to Patty, and I said, you know, all I'm thinking about is how can I get high, and how can I get away from you, and where can I get some money, and what kind of story can I tell the connection, and I'm really scared, I don't know how to do this shit. And she said, well, you know, there's a meeting tonight, and we'll take you to the meeting, and we can go to my folks and get something to eat, and I said, okay. And we did that, you know. And I went to that meeting. You know, before you're surrendered, when you go to a meeting, it's like, you know, oh, you can have my chair. I'll be out here in the back. You know, I'm not using it, you know. Well, by the time I got to that meeting, it was, this is my chair and I'll fight you for it, motherfucker. You know. I sat down in the meeting. It came to me and I said, my name's Kermit and I'm a drug addict. It was an AA meeting. I wanted them to know I use drugs. And about 3 people said hello. That's what I felt, you know. And I raised my hand and I said, all I'm thinking about is how to get high, and I don't know how to do this stuff, and I'm really scared. And this little redneck sitting next to me with a shit-eating grin, just smiling. He had the answer, and I just smiling. You won't believe what he says to me. Get this. He says, Jeff, don't get high today. I went, wow, doesn't that funny? I mean, till I go to sleep? He said, yeah, today. I wonder why I didn't think of that. And I went to bed that night, and I woke up the next morning, and I was free. Well, I'm not saying I haven't had a burning desire to use since that day, because I've had some barn burners. But I knew without a shadow of a doubt that I never had to use again the rest of my life, one day at a time, in 12-step meetings. And I woke up the next morning and I made that second decision. And that is the second half of the first step. the one we always miss. My life had become unmanageable. I made a decision to not do it my way anymore, that I would turn my will and life over to care of the people in the meeting, that I was going to do it their way. Yeah. I surrendered, went to meetings every day. You know, whatever they said, I did it. You know, I was about 4 months clean and going to a drug counselor, and he gave me and another guy a starter kit. And he said, "Why don't you go start one of those NA meetings?" I said, "I wonder why I didn't think of that." I'd been to NA in the hospital when they sent me 3 hours away across the state because they wouldn't take me in the other place anymore. And I found the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, thank God. In fact, since my very first meeting of NA, I've never used again. You know? That's the power. You know? And, you know, the guy gave us the starter kit, and we wrote letters to all the churches around town, and, you know, you get those lovely responses that you can sort of read between the lines, you know. "The Board of Deacons do not feel that it is prudent at this time to have a bunch of drug-shooting junkies in our basement and give you a key. Are you crazy? Sincerely, Reverend Sosa." Yeah. We must have sent 40 letters out. We got one back from this little Cherry Avenue church, and the guy said, "Sure." You know, we went over there, and, you know, it's a program of attraction. We wore suits, you know. And the guy gave us a key. Oh my God. And I got excited, you know. I wanted to give back, you know, this reciprocal deal here, you know. Narcotics Anonymous saved my life, you know. These people were showing me how to live. And I think I owed a little something. Just a little something. And I've got an ego the size of the Grand Canyon. So I got involved, and I ran around town and made flyers and went to all the treatment centers and "Send addicts to our NA meeting." One. And about a week later, it was like 3 days before we started the first meeting, I got a call from a treatment center. And they said, "We have this 14-year-old girl. She's on our fifth floor psych ward. She's here for her second time for committing suicide. She's been eating speed. Would you come and talk to her?" I had 4 months clean, the big guru. What the hell do I know? And I said, "Okay." And I went in there, and they gave us a room, and they put a chair over here for her and a chair for me. And I sat down, and, you know, when you got 4 months of recovery and, you know, 15 years of using, you know. So I told her every dirty, rotty, nasty, scummy thing I'd done for the last 12 years. And in the last 5 minutes of my talk, I said, "And I've been clean for 4 months, and I go to Narcotics Anonymous." And she said, "Okay." She said, I nodded in all the appropriate places. You know, she was listening to me and going, "Yep, that's it, yep." And she came to that first meeting. We had everything we needed for a good meeting. We had two or more recovering addicts, a white book, and one good sick one. Gotta have a good sick one. She was having trouble getting that one day at a time stuff, so we were walking after the meeting one night, and I said, "Well, Jennifer, why don't you just not use from this meeting till the next meeting?" And of course she gave us the famous line, "I wonder why I didn't think of that." And that's what she did. And in 4 months, she's going to be celebrating 15 years clean in Narcotics Anonymous. And if you sow goodness, you will reap goodness in the form of inner joy. Let me tell you, when I see Jennifer, as they say in that movie Little Big Man, when the old Indian chief sees his son, he says, "My heart soars like an eagle." Amen. And she has sponsees, and they have sponsees, and they have sponsees. And she gives back what was so freely given to her. You know, she reciprocates. You know, I was trying to do that, learn that third step stuff. You know, I had about 9 months clean, about time. I've been in charge of everything. Yeah, I wanted to be WSR, represent the world to God. They say it's my favorite position, but it's already been taken. There's some folks in California that think they have it. Let's get spiritual, spiritual. Let me hear your body talk, yeah. So I was going to AA meetings, because that's all we had back then. There was one AA meeting a week. We did a lot of young people stuff and, you know, in the group counseling. And I would listen in the meetings, and, you know, this is what I thought should work the steps. You listen in the meeting, and then you try to apply the stuff, you know. And then you can say, I've worked 6, 7, 8, and 9. Thank you very much. I'm well. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the thing, you know. Newcomers come in here, it's great. They want to do 1, 9, and 12. I surrender. I sorry. I help you. That's like the guys you see in the, I love this, the guys you see in the H&I meetings, and, you know, you finish your talk and they're in the front row, you know, they got their hand up through half the meeting, you know, ooh, 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 you know, and you pick on them, you know what they're going to say, right? The guy's going, I worked my first 3 steps with my sponsor, and I'm making amends to my family, and I'm getting ready to do my 4th step, and these have been the best 2 days of my life. She got it, right? She can identify, right? I was like that, sitting in the treatment centers and go, you gotta get honest, motherfucker. Wouldn't do any work. I wasn't writing anything. I was doing my assignments, you know. Junior counselor. Yeah. Been there, done that, you know. 1-year wonder, working treatment, yeah. It's real easy to look cool when you're standing next to somebody who's puking on his shoes. I'm recovery bound, but you know, I work a treat bunch. My sponsor dragged me out of 3 years. He said, when you have 9 or 10 years and you've worked on all your issues, then you can go back and work in those places. He says, but right now you're not a caregiver, you're a caretaker. And you're feeding your ego and your needs by those people. And you're not capable of giving them what they need and confronting them because you might not get your big ego fix. I'm still not well enough to work in treatment, I think. Yeah, that's one of the sad things. And with 15 years clean, having worked all 12 steps, I know I'm not well enough to go to area service. I just want to control everything. I know it, man. I get in and they all look up to me. Oh, look. Give us the answer, almighty one. Do it my way. Thank you. Right. Selfless service. Yeah, not. Where are we going here, God? I started practicing this let go. You know, I jump around. Be grateful you don't live in here. I started to do this let go, let God stuff, you know, and when you're real new at it and you got no direction at all, you're like, okay, we stopped at the light because there's going to be an accident up the road and God wants us to stop, so that, you know, like watching everything, it's a sign from God, somebody dropped their napkin. Well, it's all deal, you know, when you're ready, you know, you're ready, right? So, I get into my fiance's car and I get this letter from the sheriff's department. I'm sure they wanted me to speak. Yeah. So I open it up, and it's a warrant for my arrest, and I'm mad. You know, I've been doing all this good stuff. Come on, let's get some of the back here, you know? And so I look up in the sky, and I said, all right, we're going to test this stuff. Right? I said, all right, God, what do you want me to do about this one? And the Beatles song, Let It Be, came on the radio. I don't need thunder and lightning. Beatles will do just fine. Speaking words of wisdom, let it be. As I help. So I did. I said, I'm going to let go and let God, okay? I'm going to give this problem to God and act as if he's got it already taken care of. And I'm just going to go do the next right thing to do. So that's what I did. until the day before court, and then I was a nervous mess. And the next morning, I was like, you know, dressed up in my suit and my big book, and I'm sitting in the back row where all the guilty people sit. And I'm doing that, you know, the long serenity prayer, you know. I like to go down to court today, you know, in recovery, because I, like Richard Pryor said, I went there for justice, and that's what I found, just us. And I want to go with a stack of white books, because they're all addicts, you know. 30 days, have a white book. Drunken disorder, have a white book, you know. And they call my name, and I'm doing the long walk, and I'm like, God damn it, sorry, God really speak. Because I'm going to the same judge who I'd seen twice before, the one that said, if I see you here again, I'm going to try you to the fullest extent of law.
Yes.
And I went in there with, what do you got to do when you turn it over? You got to go with willingness, right? That's one of those reciprocal deals, you know? So I was willing. I was willing to share it all, you know, and when you're new in recovery, you're going to tell everything. I was going to tell every crime. Yes, I broke in that cigarette stand at the train station when I was 9 years old with David Reingold. You don't want to hear all that shit. So the judge is there, right, and he calls the lawyer over for Safeway. He says, counselor, he says, do you recognize this check as a year old? At first he goes, Mr. Osmond, he says, you want to tell us something about this check? And I went, well, Your Honor, he said, hold it. Calls the lawyer for Safeway over, and he says, you know, counselor, this check's a year old. You can't prosecute this man in a criminal case for a check that's a year old. The lawyer said, well, I can't. He said, no, you can't. So now you can prosecute him in a civil suit and get your money back. He says, unless, Mr. So-and-so, you're here to pay the money you owe. What do you think I said? Yes, Your Honor, that's what I'm here to do. He said, pay the man $32, case dismissed. I didn't get to open my mouth. If I had said anything, I would have blown it. I have had a deep faith in the God of my understanding since that day, and it is unshakable. That is a gift that was given to me by Narcotics Anonymous. You know? And I cannot put a price on that. It is priceless. To have a loving God in your life that is there with you all the time. To know for the first time in your life that there is someone who's watching out over you. That there is a reason for life. And that no matter what's going on in your life, God already has it taken care of. What kind of price can you put on that? You know, it's priceless to me. I went to the first Virginia Convention of Narcotics Anonymous. And I was sitting there in the room. They said, you know, I said, I want to be of service. They said, here, take a white book and start a marathon meeting. And I was sitting up there. I was all upset for some reason. Could be I was in a relationship. And I'm sitting in this meeting, and, you know, it was a balcony over the Atlantic Ocean. It was beautiful, and nobody was there but me. And I just started reading out of the white book. And a couple of addicts showed up, and this one guy showed up from Connecticut. This hippie-like guy. His name was Danny Sullivan. He's passed away. God rest his soul. And, you know, he was one of those rock and roll hippies. White, you know, white hat with the long hair and the fluffy jacket with the, you know. And he came prancing in with a whole crew of people, and we did the marathon. And at the end of the convention, I got to know him a little bit. At the end of the convention, I said, man, Danny, would you do me a favor? I said, I got a real good sick one up in Connecticut. I got the sister and her husband up in Connecticut. He said, you know, would you give them a call? Here's their number. This guy went back to Connecticut and took 5 minutes to pick up a telephone. 5 minutes. And he called, and my sister was on the other line. He's an addict. Oh, yeah, man, cool, man. Yeah, man, cool. Yeah, man, cool. Yeah, I'm not going to go down to the avenue anymore. We're going to send somebody down, you know. And my husband just got out of a 3-year bid, you know, in jail. And, you know, but we're not going to go down because we don't want to get busted anymore. And, yeah, well, I'll keep your number. And for some reason, she threw that number in the drawer. She didn't throw it in the garbage can. She threw it in the drawer. And about a week later, the old man went down to the avenue. Can't wait. Got to get the dope. We'll worry about that other stuff later. And he got nailed, and they took him right back to prison. And my sister picked up the phone, and she called that guy, Danny Sullivan. And he got her to a meeting. And she kicked in her bathtub. She went to the meeting and sat in the bathtub and sweated it out. And the miracle of Narcotics Anonymous is that she's sitting in the back row back there. Stand up, Julia. Come on. Yeah. How many, Julie? 13 and a half years clean. Narcotics Anonymous gave me a sister. Gave me a lifelong friend. A lifelong recovery friend that I've always been able to be in contact with and close with, no matter where we were. We always knew that no matter what the insane family we lived in was doing. I'll tell you about a little story about my family. Here's our theme music. Doodle-doo. Doodle-doo. Right? What's the price you put on that, huh? Priceless. Beyond any measure. Yeah. Got a younger brother. What's he coming up on? 6? 8 years clean. Well, lives out in California. Got a stepmother that died from alcoholism. She hemorrhaged in her apartment in New York and bled to death. And I got a brother that went through 11 treatment centers in the last 12, 13 years. Thanksgiving, we're going down to put the tombstone on his grave because he died from the disease of AIDS. I can never repay the debt of gratitude that I had to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous if I worked at it day and night for the rest of my life, because I owe everything that I have. Narcotics Anonymous has put a woman in my life that's beyond my wildest dreams. Yeah. Beyond my wildest dreams. And we have a lovely home and a lovely dog and a lovely life. Yeah. We're like two little kids, you know. Now, whether I sell comic books for a living. I'm in fantasy, thank you. And I'll be out of the road on the show, and I'll be tired, and I'll be grumpy because I just packed up 32 long boxes of comics, and I'm sweating, and I've been working all weekend, and I'll call her back, and she said, and the phone rings, and I say, "Hi, honey," and she says, "It's my Termy," and my little kid just starts beating. You know, she touches my inner child. And the only reason she can touch my inner child is because you people taught me how to clean up the shit that was in the way. So I can feel my child today. Yeah. I'm going to end with a song. I heard it at that same first convention in Georgia, and it sums up everything that I believe in Narcotics Anonymous. See, that's the deal here, folks. It's a reciprocal agreement. We save your life, and you save someone else's. You know? And when you're going to the conventions and you got the 9 pounds of gold on your chest, don't say you want an indigent package, motherfucker. Yeah. And when they need somebody to do an H&I meeting, don't tell them you got to go get your hair done. You know? Because somebody didn't get their hair done and came to the treatment center where you were that night. You know? I went to a treatment center in 1981. I walked in that center on September 5th of 1981. And 4 days later, I walked into my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting because some people from Virginia Beach were doing an H&I and bringing it over. I'm clean today through H&I. Yeah. And when the basket goes around, I put $2 in because I got $2 today. You know? I'll have to put $1 in. Come on. You know? And I take newcomers to conventions because somebody put me in a van in 1983 and took me to a convention. And it changed my life. Someone introduced us somewhere. I don't remember now. I guess we started talking, but I don't know what about. Michael was from Florida, by way of NYC, and from that moment on, he became a friend to me. Well, I always used to see him, and sometimes we'd drop by, and every time he'd be alone, just trying to get high. The high was never high enough. He tried day after day, and helplessly I watched his spirit simply slip away. God, he used to sit and brag, the money and the dope he had, but I just can't forget how sad Michael looked to me. Well, I read the evening papers, they called it heart attack, but I know damn full and well he overdosed on smack. So now the party's over, they're gonna run out of space. I never will quite forget the look on Michael's face. God, he used to sit and brag, the money and the dope he had, but I just can't forget how sad Michael looked to me. Well, I'd like to say in closing, the story's sad but true, and somewhere lives a Michael in me and all of you. And I am deeply grateful for what I have today, because I would be where he is if it wasn't for N.A. Thank you.
So, you know, I went on this spiritual retreat, and the Tuesday afterwards, it was like a follow-up to it, and you could invite the people that you really cared. And, you know, this retreat was just full of women, you know, and they're all, you know, professional and hot, and, you know, what are they going to think, and who knows what. And I said, fuck that stuff. This is the woman I care about. This is the woman that I love. This is the woman that I want. This is all in like a 4-day period. I went down to Baltimore, was with her for 2 days, came back, and the next Monday I called her up. I said, I'd like you to come to this thing in New York. She said, fine, how do you want me to get there? I said, I'll send you a ticket. And she got up on a plane and came up. And in 4 and 5 days, being together, we know without a shadow of a doubt that we want to spend the rest of our lives together. And of course, when you say that to anybody in recovery, the negative committee comes out. One of the things I learned was that, you know, life is like, okay, when I get my high school diploma, then I'll really be arrived, you know, and you run to your high school diploma, and then you get there and you go, okay, well, when I get to college, then I'm really going to be here, and I'm really going to live my life, and you run to college, and, okay, when I get the job, when I get the right job, I'm going to really be here, you know, and, okay, when I have some kids, then I'm going to really be in life, and I'm going to really going to live, and then and you run down and you go, okay, when we retire, that's when we're going to really be able to live our life. I decided, like they told me at the retreat, was live your life today. So I went down to Baltimore, and she packed up, and she's moved in with me. And this is all in what? About 3 weeks now, right? We're going on God's trust. I'm going to end with a song. Hope you're open-minded. And it sums up everything that I believe about Narcotics Anonymous. So it's called The Last Time I Saw Michael. It was written by a friend of mine, Gail C. from Nashville. And I heard it in 1982, 83. And I'm going to share. Someone introduced us somewhere. I don't remember now. I guess we started talking, but I don't know what about. Michael was from Florida, by way of NYC, and from that moment on, he became a friend to me. Well, I always used to see him, and sometimes we'd drop by, and every time he'd be alone, just trying to get high. The high was never high enough. He tried day after day, and helplessly I watched his spirit simply slip away. God, he used to sit and brag, the money and the dope he had, but I just can't forget how sad Michael looked to me. Well, I read the evening papers, they called it heart attack, but I know damn full and well he overdosed on smack. So now the party's over, they've gone running out of space. I never will quite forget the look on Michael's face. God, he used to sit and brag, the money and the dope he had, but I just can't forget how sad Michael looked to me. Well, I'd like to say in closing, the story's sad but true, and somewhere lives a Michael in me and all of you, and I am deeply grateful for what I have today, because I would be where he is if it wasn't for him.
First speaker for the day will be Kermit from Alabama.
Hello. Play with the microphone on how to do that. My name is Kermit and I'm an addict. I'm clean today through the grace of God and Narcotics Anonymous, and I am honored to death to be able to stand up here in front of you people and share anything at all. Anytime, anywhere. I have the utmost respect and admiration for the members of Narcotics Anonymous. Anytime, anywhere. Because I know what kind of courage and strength it takes to stay clean for one day.
Right.
You all need to applaud yourselves. I've been walking down the hall singing, "Put me in, coach, I'm ready to play today." A moment of silence for me. I've been interviewing people for the last couple of months, and everybody I know, I talk to, I say, "Yeah, I'm doing a workshop called Reciprocity. What does that mean?" We go, "Reci who?" And this morning I was on the phone to my mother, and I said, "Mom, what do you think?" She's real English-minded and very literate, and I said, "What do you think reciprocity means?" And she says, "Oh, that means getting back at." And I spoke to my honey, and she said, "Yeah, I think she mistook reciprocity for revenge." And you wonder why I shot heroin. This guy went to an Eastern yogi and asked him this question. He says, "The Bible says evildoers shall be punished, and the good rewarded. What do you think of that, yogi?" Now, that's not Yogi the Bear, because he's a good addict. "How about a nice picnic basket? Boo-boo. Hey." Right, Yogi? Once too many, a thousand never enough. And the yogi says, certainly, if we accept the principles of cause and effect in nature and of action and reaction in physics, how can we not believe that this natural law extends also to human beings? Do not humans belong to the natural world?" And then further on he says, "This is the law of karma. If you sow evil, you will reap evil in the form of suffering. And if you sow goodness, you will reap goodness in the form of inner joy." I have inner joy today. And it's a gift that was given to me by the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. I was on the phone because I wanted to talk to my son. My son's 23 years old today. Not this day, but he is 23. And he grew up in an addict's home, you know? He grew up with a father who was an addict. He grew up with a mother who was an addict. He grew up with a stepfather that was an alcoholic. His stepfather just passed away. The guy was my running partner. And they just cremated him 2 weeks ago from this disease. And, you know, when your parents can't be there for you, you know, and you got to face the world by yourself, it's a tough job. And it's a real tough job for a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old or a 6-year-old or an 8-year-old. You know, he was dyslexic, he had reading problems, he had trouble in school, the whole 9 yards. And I got clean and wanted to get him back, you know. And it was real tough because I would have to, I'd get him for the weekends or the holidays and have to send him back to my ex-wife and her husband who were, you know, drunk all the time. But I wasn't ready yet, you know. And as I became ready, you know, it's the old saying, you know, when the pupil's ready, the teacher will appear. And God will give you what you need. And a woman came into my life, and a week later, my ex-wife called me and said, "I can't do this anymore. I got to go to treatment. Would you take him back?" I didn't have to go to court. I didn't have to do papers. I didn't have to do nothing. And I got my son back when he was 12 years old. We called it the Wonder Years. It was a wonder I didn't kill him. And what happened was the two of us grew up together, you know, and we learned about resentment and we learned about taking it out on each other, and we grew up, and he saw me talk to sponsees and he saw me act in a way that was honest and humble and giving and sharing and all these things that I was taught in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. He said he saw me live that life and he decided to choose that life, and he doesn't use. And a college kid today not using is a miracle. You know? And I called him up because my sister told me that he just got accepted into the Fine Arts College in Boston, one of the best art schools in America. You know? And I called him up, you know. Some Jewish guy said, "You know, you give me such nachas," we say, you know. It's like the chat lady, "I'm so clumped here, talk about yourself." You know? I am so proud of my son, I can't tell you, you know. And I owe that gift to Narcotics Anonymous. You know? Reciprocity to me means that there's a deal here, okay? We don't tell you really about it when you first come in. We just say, "Don't use, go to meetings, 90 meetings in 90 days, you know, work the steps or die, motherfucker." At least that's what they told me. You know, the first time I heard that was in Georgia. I like to say that the brains of Narcotics Anonymous is in California, but the heart of NA is in Georgia. Yeah. Sorry if you're from the West Coast, excuse me, but in 1983, I didn't know nothing about nothing. You know, I was going to AA and going to our one or two NA meetings where they told us we could go talk about drugs. So that's what we did. We sat around in circles and talked about drugs. And when a bunch of addicts talk about drugs, they want to get loaded. But when a bunch of addicts sit around and talk about recovery, they want to stay clean. You know? And this guy, this old guy, his name's Larry North, he's passed away. We used to call him the old man, you know. He must have had God 7-8 years clean back then, right? That was forever. And he had this old green truck. And he'd just load up addicts into this truck. You know, whenever you opened up, it was like that clown thing at the circus, just newcomers that come bubbling out. And he, you know, he said, we're going to a convention. Whenever Larry said something, I learned to say, okay. Larry would say, we're having a NA camp out, a roundup. I said, okay. I was 9 months clean. We'd never, ever had anything like that. And I said, okay. And, he said, do this, do that. And the next thing, he said, I'll get some flyers. And the next thing we knew, in 1982, 125 addicts from all over the East Coast showed up in Nowhere, Virginia for the very first Blue Ridge Roundup we ever had, the first NA function we ever had. And Larry called me and said, get in the car. I said, great, where are we going? He said, we're going to a convention in Georgia, in Atlanta. And I went, all right. And I got in this old car at about midnight, and we were driving in through the South. And I'm a New Yorker, really. I've been in the South for a bunch of years. But at 3 o'clock in the morning, driving in the middle of South Carolina with the rain pouring down and a redneck cop behind me and the steering wheel turning this far, and I'm still going straight. Oh, God, just get me to Georgia, please. But we made it, and, the fellowship was there. And they welcomed us, and it was a time of change. This friend of mine stood up at the microphone, and he said, you know what I think is great about this convention? He said, this is a Narcotics Anonymous convention with Narcotics Anonymous speakers. That was a novel idea back then. Most of the speakers that we had gotten for the conventions were AA people that were addict alcoholics. And there was this talk about this book that was being written, and they, and everybody's passing stuff out, and it was exciting, They had that floppy form of the white book. They had that out yet, Greg? The floppy, and they were passing it out, and we were making copies everywhere. We didn't know we weren't supposed to do this stuff. And my ex-wife was in Michigan, and she was doing like 400 at a time. And the office sent her a cease and desist note, And they got it, and they said, we'll make one more batch, And they sent them a copy on the top of the batch, and it said, recovery can't wait. I got excited, And I had the time of my life. I was driving back home, and I said, man, Larry, what can I ever do to repay you? You tell me, what can I, this has been the best time of my life. He said, oh, payback's a mother. He says, you see, you have to do this for others and often. Now, September 6th, I'll be celebrating 15 years in Narcotics Anonymous. And I still haven't paid Larry back. And what a friend of mine from California says, that may not impress the shit out of you, but it impresses the shit out of me that I got 15 years. When I first got clean, I went through 3 treatment centers in 2 years, and a year of therapy, and a bunch of AA meetings, not too many because I didn't want to go, because I wasn't ready, that's all. I wasn't willing. And I finally hit bottom on my last day in that. After I left the treatment center. I'm still doing it my way. They wanted me to go to a halfway house for 6 months, and I spoke to my higher power. I don't know if you know her name's Patty. And she told me she wanted me to come home. I said, well, what do I tell him? She said, tell him you made your mind up. So I went back to group and said, I've made my mind up. I have to go home. Got home to that basement apartment with my using buddy. I'd moved out of my brother's house because he was shooting heroin. I couldn't live there, so I made a decision. I moved in with my best friend who was only dealing cocaine. There are easier ways to recover, folks. all my friends would be in the living room smoking dope, and I'd be in the back reading the big book. I got to my buddy's place, and I wanted to use it so bad I could taste it, and I was thinking about it all the way home, and for the first time in my life, something cracked inside, and I turned to Patty, and I said, all I'm thinking about is how can I get high, and how can I get away from you, and where can I get some money, and what kind of story can I tell the connection, and I'm really scared, I don't know how to do this shit. And she said, well, you know, there's a meeting tonight, and we'll take you to a meeting, and we can go to my folks and get something to eat. And I said, okay. And we did that, you know. And I went to that meeting. You know, before you're surrendered, when you go to a meeting, it's like, you know, oh, you can have my chair. I'll be out here in the back. You know, I'm not using it, you know. Well, by the time I got to that meeting, it was, this is my chair and I'll fight you for it, motherfucker. You know? I sat down in the meeting, it came to me, and I said, my name's Kermit and I'm a drug addict. It was an AA meeting, I wanted them to know I use drugs. And about three people said hello, that's what I felt, you know? And I raised my hand and I said, all I'm thinking about is how to get high, and I don't know how to do this stuff, and I'm really scared. And this little redneck sitting next to me with a shit-eating grin, just smiling. He had the answer, you know, just smiling. You won't believe what he says to me. Get this. He says, Jeff, don't get high today. And I went, wow, redneck, I mean, till I go to sleep? He said, yeah, today. I said, I wonder why I didn't think of that. And I went to bed that night, and I woke up the next morning free.
Well, I haven't had any desire to use since that day, because I've had barn burners. But I knew without a shadow of a doubt that I never had to use again the rest of my life, one day at a time, off that meeting.
And I woke up the next morning, and I made that second decision. And that is the second half of the first step, the one we always miss. My life had become unmanageable. I made a decision to not do it my way anymore. I would turn my will and life to the care of the people in the meetings, and I was going to do it their way. You know, I surrendered, went to meetings every day. You know, whatever they said, I did it, you know. I seen going to a drug counselor, and he gave me a starter kit. And he said, why don't you start with those NA meetings? I said, I wonder why I didn't think of that. They sent me 3 hours away across the state because they wouldn't take me in that place anymore. And I found the Fellowship of Narcotics, and thank God. In fact, NA, I've never been.
Yes, that's powerful. You know, the guy gave us starter kit, and we wrote letters to all the churches around town, and you know, you get those lovely responses that you can sort of read between the lines, you know. The Board of Deacons do not feel that it is prudent at this time to have a bunch of drug-shooting junkies in our basement and give you a key. Are you crazy? Sincerely, Reverend Southern. Yeah.
We must have sent 40 letters out. We got one back from this little Cherry Avenue church, and the guys are, you know, we were there, and, you know,
program of track. More suits, you know.
And the guy gave us a key. The gun. And I got excited, you know. I wanted to give back, you know, this reciprocal deal here, you know. Narcotics Anonymous saved my life, you know. These people were showing me how to live, and I think I owed a little something. Just a little. And I've got an ego the size of the Grand Canyon. So I got involved, and I ran around town and went to all the treatment centers and send addicts to our NA meeting. One. And about a week later, it was like 3 days before we started the first meeting, I got a call from a treatment center, and they said, we have this 14-year-old girl, she's on our fifth floor psych ward. She's here for her second time for committing suicide. She would...
I had 4 months clean, the big guru. What the hell do I know? And I said, okay.
And I went in there, and they gave us a room, and they put a chair over here for her and a chair for me, and I sat down, and, you know, when you got 4 months of recovery and, you know, 15 years of using, you know, so I told her every dirty, rotty, nasty, scummy thing I did. For 5 minutes
of my talk, I said, and I've been clean for 4 months, and I go to Narcotics Anonymous. And she said,
okay. She said, I nodded in all the appropriate places, you know. She was listening to me and going, yep, that's me, yep, yep. And She came to that first meeting. We had everything we needed for a good meeting. We had two or more recovering addicts, a white book, and one good sick one. Got a good sick one. I was having trouble.
That one day at a time, so we were walking after the meeting one night, and I said, well, Jennifer, she was just not used from this meeting till the next meeting. And, of course, she gave us the famous line, I wonder why I didn't think of that.
And that's what she did. And in 4 months, she's going to be celebrating 15 years clean in Narcotics Anonymous. And if you sow goodness, you will reap goodness in the form of inner joy. Let me tell you, when I see Jennifer, as they say in that movie Little Big Man, when the old Indian chief sees his son, he says, my heart soars like an eagle. You know? And she has sponsees, and they have sponsees, and they have sponsees. And she gives back what was really given to her. You know? Reciprocates. You know? I was trying to learn that third step stuff. You know, I had about 9 months clean, about time. I've been in charge of everything. Yeah, I wanted to be WSR, represent the world to God. My favorite position, but I'm taken. There's some folks in California that think they have it. Let's get spiritual. Let me hear your body talk, yeah. So I was going to the AA meeting, so that's all we had a week. We did a lot of people stuff and, you know, in the group counseling. And I would listen in the meetings and, you know, this is what I thought should work the step. You listen in the meeting and then you try to apply the stuff, you know. And then you can say, I've worked 6, 7, 8, and 9, thank you very much. Yeah, that's the thing, you know, newcomers come in here, it's great, they want to do 1, 9, and 12. I surrender, I sorry, I help you. See, a lot of those guys do some H&I meetings, and, you know, you finish your talk, and they're in the front row, you know, and they got their hand up through half the meeting, you know. Ooh, 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 you know? And you pick on them, you know what they're going to say, right? The guy's going, I worked my 3 steps with my sponsor, and talking to men's families, getting ready to do my 4 steps, and these have been the best 2 days of my life. She right? She can identify, right? I was like that, sitting in the treatment center, and go, "You got to get honest, motherfucker." Wouldn't do any work. I wasn't writing anything. I was doing my assessment. Doing your counselor. Yeah, been that. You know, 1 year wonder, working treatment. Yeah. It's real easy to look cool when you're standing next to somebody who's puking on his shoes. I'm Ron, don't you know? I work at treatment. My sponsor dragged me out of 3 years. He said, when you have 9 or 10 years and you've worked on all your issues, you go back and work in those places. But he says, right now you're not a caregiver, you're a caretaker. And you're feeding your ego and your needs by those people. And you're not capable of giving them any confront.
Because you might not get a big ego fix.
I'm still not well enough to work in treatment, I think. You know, that's one of those sad things, and with 15 years clean, having worked all the staff, not well enough to go to area service.
I just want to control everything. I know it, and I get in, and they all look up to me. Oh, look, I was here.
Give us the answer, almighty one.
Do it my way. Thank you.
Right. Selfless service, not. Where are we going here, God? So I started practicing this let go. You know, I jump around, don't live in here. I started to do this let go, let God stuff, you know, and when you're real new at it and you got no direction at all, you're like, okay, we stopped at the light and up to stop, so, you know, like watching everything as a sign from God, somebody dropped their napkin. No, it's all deal, you know, when you're ready, you know, ready, right? So, I get into my fiance's car and I get this letter from the sheriff's department. I'm sure they wanted me to speak, you know. So I open it up and it's a warrant for my arrest and I'm mad, you know. You know, I've been doing all this good stuff. Come on, let's get some of the back here, you know. So I'm up in the sky. And I said, all right, we're going to test that. Right? I said, all right, God, what do you want me to do about this one? And the Beatles song, Let It Be, came on the radio. I don't need thunder and lightning. Beatles will do just fine. Speaking words of wisdom, let it be. I was like, oh. So I did. I said, I'm going to let go and let God, okay? I'm going to give this problem to God and act as if he's got it already taken care of. I'm just going to go do the next right thing to do. So that's what I did until the day before court, and then I was a nervous mess. And the next morning, I was like, you know, dressed up in my suit and my big book, and I'm sitting in the back row where all the guilty people sit. And I'm doing that, you know, the long serenity prayer, you know. I like to go down to court today, you know, in recovery, because I, like Richard Pryor said, I went there for justice, and that's what I found, just us. And I want to go with a stack of white books, because they're all addicts, you know, 30 days, have a white book. Drunken disorder, have a white book, you know. And they call my name, and I'm doing the long walk, and I'm like, God, grab his strength, God, grab his strength. Because I'm going to the same judge who I'd seen twice before, the one that said, if I see you here again, I'm going to try you to the fullest extent of law. Yes. And I went in there with, what do you got to do when you turn it over? You got to go with willingness, right? That's one of those reciprocal deals, you know? So I was willing. I was willing to share it all, you know, and when you're new in recovery, you're going to tell everything. I was going to tell every crime. Yes, I broke in that cigarette stand at the train station when I was 9 years old with David Ryan Goldman. You didn't want to hear all that. So the judge is there, right, and he calls the lawyer over for Safeway. He says, counselor, he says, do you recognize this check as a year old? At first he goes, Mr. Osterman, he says, you want to tell us something about this check? And I went, well, Your Honor, he said, hold it. Calls the lawyer for Safeway over, and he says, you know, counsel, this check's a year old. You can't prosecute this man in a criminal case for a check that's a year old. The lawyer said, well, I can't. He said, no, you can't. But now you can prosecute him in a civil suit and get your money back. He says, unless, Mr. So-and-so, you're here to pay the money you owe. What do you think I said? Yes, Your Honor, that's what I'm here to do. He said, pay the man $32, case dismissed. I didn't get to open my mouth. If I had said anything, I would have blown it. I have had a deep faith in the God of my understanding since that day, and it is unshakable. That is a gift that was given to me by Narcotics Anonymous. You know? And I cannot put a price on that. It is priceless. To have a loving God in your life that is there with you all the time. To know for the first time in your life that there is someone who's watching out over you. That there is a reason for life. And that no matter what's going on in your life, God already has it taken care of. What kind of price can you put on that? You know, it's priceless to me. I went to the first Virginia Convention of Narcotics Anonymous, and I was sitting there in a room. They said, you know, I said, I want to be of service. They said, here, take a white book and start a marathon meeting. And I was sitting up there. I was all upset for some reason. Could be I was in a relationship. And
And I'm sitting in this meeting, and, you know, it was a balcony over the Atlantic Ocean. It was beautiful, and nobody was there but me, and I just started reading out of the white book. And a couple of addicts showed up, and this one guy showed up from Connecticut. This hippie-like guy. His name was Danny Sullivan. He's passed away. God rest his soul. And, you know, he was one of those rock and roll hippies. A white, you know, white hat with the long hair and the fluffy jacket with the, you know. And he came prancing in with a whole crew of people, and we did the marathon. And at the end of the convention, I got to know him a little bit. And at the end of the convention, I said, "Man, Danny, would you do me a favor?" I said, I got a real good sick one up in Connecticut. I got the sister and her husband up in Connecticut. He said, "You know, would you give them a call? Here's their number." This guy went back to Connecticut and took 5 minutes to pick up a telephone. 5 minutes. And he called, and my sister was on the other line. He's an addict. "Oh, yeah, man, cool, man. Yeah, man, cool. Yeah, man, cool. You know, yeah, I'm not going to go down to the Avenue anymore. We're going to send somebody down, you know. And my husband just got out of the 3-year bid, you know, in jail. And, you know, but we're not going to go down because we don't want to get busted anymore. And, yeah, well, I'll keep your number." And for some reason, she threw that number in the drawer. She didn't throw it in the garbage can. She threw it in the drawer. And about a week later, her old man went down to the Avenue. Can't wait. Got to get the dope. We'll worry about that other stuff later. And he got nailed, and they took him right back to prison. And my sister picked up the phone, and she called that guy, Danny Sullivan, and he got her to a meeting. And she kicked in her bathtub. She went to the meeting and sat in the bathtub and sweated it out. And the miracle of Narcotics Anonymous is that she's sitting in the back row back there. Stand up, Juliet. Come on. Bye. How many, Julie? 13 and a half years clean. Narcotics Anonymous gave me a sister. Gave me a lifelong friend, a lifelong recovery friend that I've always been able to be in contact with and close with, no matter where we were. We always knew that no matter what the insane family we lived in was doing. I'll tell you about a little story about my family. Here's our theme music. Doodle-doo. Doodle-doo. Right? What's the price you put on that, huh? Priceless. Beyond any measure. Yeah. Got a younger brother. What's he coming up on? 6? 8 years clean. Yeah, lives out in California. Got a stepmother that died from alcoholism. She hemorrhaged in her apartment in New York and bled to death. And I got a brother that went through 11 treatment centers in the last 12, 13 years. Thanksgiving, we're going down to put the tombstone on his grave because he died from the disease of AIDS. I can never repay the debt of gratitude that I have to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. If I worked at it day and night for the rest of my life, because I owe everything that I have. Narcotics Anonymous has put a woman in my life that's beyond my wildest dreams. Beyond my wildest dreams. And we have a lovely home and a lovely dog and a lovely life. Yeah. We're like two little kids, you know. Now, whether I sell comic books for a living. I'm in fantasy, thank you. And I'll be out on the road on the show, and I'll be tired, and I'll be grumpy because I just packed up 32 long boxes of comics, and I'm sweating, and I've been working all weekend, and I'll call her back, and she said, and the phone rings, and I say, "Hi, honey," and she says, "It's my termie," and my little kid just starts beating, you know. She touches my inner child. And the only reason she can touch my inner child is because you people taught me how to clean up the shit that was in the way. So I can feel my child today.
Yeah.
I'm going to end with a song. I heard it at that same first convention in Georgia, and it sums up everything that I believe in Narcotics Anonymous. See, that's the deal here, folks. It's a reciprocal agreement. We save your life, and you save someone else's. You know? And when you're going to the conventions and you got the 9 pounds of gold on your chest, don't say you want an indigent package, motherfucker. Yeah. And when they need somebody to do an H&I meeting, don't tell them you got to go get your hair done. You know? Because somebody didn't get their hair done and came to the treatment center where you were that night. You know? I went to a treatment center in 1981. I walked in that center on September 5th of 1981. And 4 days later, I walked into my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting because some people from Virginia Beach were doing an H&I and bringing it over. I'm clean today through H&I. Yeah. And when the basket goes around, I put $2 in because I got $2 today. You know? I don't have to put $1 in. Come on. You know? And I take newcomers to conventions because somebody put me in a van in 1983 and took me to a convention. And it changed my life. Someone introduced us somewhere. I don't remember now. I guess we started talking, but I don't know what about. Michael was from Florida, away of NYC. And from that moment on, he became a friend to me. Well, I always used to see him, and sometimes we'd drop by. And every time he'd be alone, just trying to get high. The high was never high enough. He tried day after day, and helplessly I watched his spirit simply slip away. God, he used to sit and brag the money and the dope he had. But I just can't forget how sad Michael looked to me. Well, I read the evening paper. They called it heart attack. But I know damn full and well he overdosed on smack. So now the party's over. They've gone and rented out his face. I never will quite forget the look on Michael's face. God, he used to sit and brag the money and the dope he had. But I just can't forget how sad Michael looked to me. Well, I'd like to say in closing, the story's sad but true. And somewhere lives a Michael and me and all of you. And I am deeply grateful for what I have today, because I would be where he is if it wasn't for N.A. Thanks.
Had a meeting.